Episode 79.
You have to discipline yourself, and then you allow them to fix it. You allow them to become successful. So in leadership, it's not about gathering all the best people so that you look good and so that you can say, this is my team with a big puffy chest like a rooster. It's really about pushing out all that you have that to give to others so they succeed. And quietly, you know that you're a good leader when others rise to leadership as well.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to On Point from Remarkable Results Radio, and a special interview from an auto care industry professional. On Point. Welcome, aftermarketers, to episode 79. Carm Capriotto here with Shari Pheasant, COO of the Institute for Automotive Business Excellence. And it's brought to you by Federal Mogul Motor Parts, with brands like Moog, Felpro, Wagner Brake, Champion, Seal Power, FP Diesel, and more. They're the parts techs trust. Find out more at fmmotorparts.com. Now, you may recall Shari Pheasant was with us in an earlier episode, number 68, where we talked about her unique equine leadership training program called Horsepower Strategies. If you have not listened to episode 68, you really owe yourself. Shari is a very dynamic person and brings a strong perspective on shop ownership and leadership, not just because she and her husband own a shop in Sparks, Nevada, but also what she sees in her role as COO of the Institute for Automotive Business Excellence. So why listen? Learn about how the relationship with her husband and partner works as shop owners, which is so important today. Understand why she says people, purpose, and process are the most important areas to focus on, and in that order. Learn how to allow yourself to be uncomfortable as a leader and see how ego and confidence can live in the same box. The quality of our personal lives matter and can and will affect our own work environment. Shop owners, you need to get paid what you deserve and get her view on the future of the professional shop and why it must be neighborhood-centric. Hey, there's a lot more on Shari on the show notes page. Enjoy a real fun and inspiring interview with Shari Pheasant. Ready? Well, here we go. Shari, how does the wife of a technician who turned businessman help you in your role as COO of the Institute for Automotive Business Excellence?
I see that the business owners in the automotive market are 70 to 80% technicians that have turned business owners. So that is the nature of the beast, so to speak. And so I've been in the lair. Fought the battle. We've won the war. We've worked together. We've climbed the mountain. We've, you know, bounced ideas. So been there, done that.
Yeah. And so I think what you're really saying is that you survived from, working in your business to working on your business.
Well, that's always been a focus of mine, even before I stepped into the automotive industry. So yes, my husband is now making that final transition to on as well. And he's been on and off, on and in. And so with me stepping away the last year and a half, he's making that final blood transfusion.
So for many of our listeners are shop owners, entrepreneurs. You have a great little story to tell about what happened in your greatest challenge on moving, having to find a new location.
So for me, the gold nugget is that it doesn't matter how good it gets. It doesn't stay there.
That's good.
You know, it's a constant. Being an entrepreneur, you can never be sedate. You can never hover. I believe that in any business. I believe that in life. But I think it's most prevalent as an entrepreneur because, you can't rest on your laurels. You have to keep going. Culture continues. And we were in a building for about 11 years. We thought that we had a contract, and we did have some things in writing to purchase the building when we invested about $100,000 into a remodel. It expanded our business from about 4,000 square feet to about 7,500. But towards the end of it, when it came time for us to get into that contract for sale and switch the way that we did business with the landlord, that person was no longer willing to do that. And in order to hold them account, we waited a couple years. We were very patient, great relationship. She ate lunch with our employees every day. That became evident wasn't going to happen for us. So we looked at that $100,000 as an investment in who we were in the community, helped build our business to $1.6 million a year. And then we, in 4 months, found a new 10,000 square foot building, renovated it, about $200,000, and moved in.
How much of the $100,000 did you lose?
All of it.
Wow.
All of it stayed. It was, well, it was in windows. It was in double painting the windows. It was in redoing the electrical that was subsufficient.
Did she pay you back?
No, no.
Okay.
But you know, that's the game. Come on, Carm. That's the game in business. It happens at different scales and different levels with people, but you know, build to suit. You know, you can go through a whole bunch of things. Now, we did have coercion on her. And I mean, I have a bunch of stuff, but am I going to spend my days with the lawyer in court? Or am I going to move on and build our business again and work on our culture? Because they were doing drive-bys. They were parking their cars right in front of our customer door. They were yelling at clients. They were yelling at our employees. You know, it became horror. Absolute horror film.
I got it. Got it. So how does a husband and wife work together so well?
We accept the ups and downs.
Okay.
We draw lines. You know, when we come home, we work pretty hard not to discuss certain things. We put it in time with business. I think that's important. And I think we've learned that what each other is good at, we build to our strengths, and we understand that each one of us has a pertinent role in the business, and we're both great at what we do.
So there's
work, it's different.
So the work-life balance thing is much harder when two people work together, isn't it?
Well, sure, because now it's 24/7.
Yeah.
Literally. And it's been a little now, and it's been a little different now with me the last year and a half that I've stepped away. So then you have those challenges as well. But, you know, we celebrate 25 years in the December 13th. So
great. Congratulations. Wow. I just did my 39th.
Wow. Congratulations to you. So 40. You got a big one next year.
Yeah, you're right. And I sure hope the kids are planning something. Shari, when you're out working with clients and in supporting your coaches, what do you hear and see are critical areas that shop owners are having problems with?
Well, I don't believe our industry is different than many. When I study business and I research the things that assist me in offering the right advice for people, I see that we are losing as businesses on a whole $11.9 trillion a year to a lack of employee engagement. And so what that means is that our employees are not completely engaged. They're disgruntled. They're disheartened. They're halfway there. They're just similar to a customer coming in and looking for service and just kind of being treated average. And so they, out of the 40 hours a week that they're with us, their productivity averages between 50 and 60%. So when you pay them an hourly fee, you're not really getting that.
Okay.
And so
you just opened up an interesting can here. I love it.
I do that.
Now, that's good. That's good because I've read a lot of those statistics myself and have read a lot about purpose and how, you know, putting your people first gets you your profits. If you take care of your people, they'll take care of your customers. Is this where you're driving?
Absolutely. I think that there's a business gentleman that I admire, one of my that I consider my mentors, and it's people, process, and product, and people is first. And so customer service starts on the inside. If we're not happy with each other, if our technicians are not treating the service advisors, the shop assistant, other technicians like they would treat a client that they want to have forever. Another gal that I admire always says they're date your clients,
yeah.
Get engaged.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and those of us in the same mindset like to use each other's terminology a bit because it helps spread the message in different ways. But it's people first. And so when you do that on the inside of your business with your culture, that speaks to the brand that you then present to your clients. Elizabeth Roosevelt said, it's not who you are when people are watching, but it's who you are when nobody's there.
Yeah. How strong that is. Here's great news. There's a new brake pad on the market that can stop a pickup SUV or CUV up to 50 feet sooner than other leading pads. And on top of that, it lasts up to twice as long as previous designs. Sound too good to be true? Well, Wagner Brake did it. They designed their new Wagner OEX brake pads that stopped up to 50 feet sooner than other leading brake pads. To prove it, they got Link Engineering, pretty much the industry standard on brake performance testing, and they got their proof. But Wagner needed more convincing. They asked 400 top technicians to put Wagner OEX pads to the test, where it matters most, in their shops and on their customers' vehicles. 99% said they saw a noticeable difference in the new brakes, and 95% said they'd likely recommend them to other service professionals for their customers. Now, soon you can get Wagner OEX brake pads in your shop. They'll be available nationwide with coverage for 95% of U.S. pickups, SUVs, and CUVs. Get the full story. Learn about the science behind Wagner OEX and check coverage. Go to WagnerBrake.com. So leadership and engaging, where does it come? I mean, can you learn it? Can you go be coached? Can you, where do you get good at that?
Well, you surround yourself with people of the same mindsets, and you surround yourself with people that challenge you. If you are a person that isn't willing to be uncomfortable, isn't willing to look for change, and even as a leader, I still allow myself to be uncomfortable. I still allow myself to be challenged and to fail, because I realize that in doing that, I'm reaching higher and succeeding. And if I'm not, I'm hovering, which is really moving down, right?
We've had a lot of discussion recently with a few people about putting the ego on the shelf. And a lot of that for any entrepreneur who's been successful, they were a great technician and they started to become a great manager on their way to become a great entrepreneur. And they look back and they say, hey, wow, I'm so proud of this stuff. But the ladder is still so big. And part of that success trail is to put the ego on the shelf, I've been told.
Yeah, I hear that too. And I homeschooled my children into college and I taught them that ego and confidence exist in the same box. If you hold your hands together and you form a little square with them, you know, thumbs on the bottom, fingers on the top, mm-hmm. that's what room you have in yourself for ego and confidence. If it fills with ego, it leaves very little room for confidence. But if it fills with confidence, the ego goes away. And confidence comes from humility. It comes from vulnerability. Those are traits in leadership that I see people are leaving behind. They're bringing, I have to always be right. I need to know the answers. It's that being at war mindset. Scarcity. It's coming from scarcity rather than abundance.
That's great stuff, and I appreciate that. If you were involved and going to be engaged with a shop owner right now, and you've interviewed the entire place and you've sat down with the principal and you said, I think that the biggest issue we have here to work on is the engagement of your team, what are the first things you would do to the leader of that organization to help them bring engagement and purpose?
Nice question. And we've done that. We do that with people, and we can tell there's a lack of engagement from the interviews that we do with employees and what's happening. And it's nobody's fault and nobody's to blame. Like I said, I don't think this industry is any different than what I see nationally and probably internationally as well. I only have the stats from America, but the lack of engagement comes from 65% of employees saying that their leader or their boss is not acting appropriately as a leader. And does things that does not motivate them. And so, and there's 43% that would get another job if they thought they could find one. And just all of this stuff that supports that we need to make our business environments better. So I start by asking questions. I believe that when you ask questions and you allow people to think out loud and talk back with what they're feeling and what they see, and then you work with that, that's how you teach them. So if I went into an owner, Carmen, and said, hey, so George, wow, you are really a jerk. Your employees are not engaged because you go out there and you get in their way and you try to tech because you used to be a tech and you want to show them that's your value. That's what you've discovered is your value. And so when you go out and tech, you feel good. The adrenaline goes and you know you've done your job for the day. And the problem with that is that that's not your job anymore. Your job is to motivate them to learn, and they can come and ask you, and then you have to hold back. You have to discipline yourself, and then you allow them to fix it. You allow them to become successful. So in leadership, it's not about gathering all the best people so that you look good and so that you can say, this is my team with a big puffy chest like a rooster. It's really about pushing out all that you have that to give to others so they succeed. And quietly, you know that you're a good leader when others rise to leadership as well.
Yeah, they need to feel good about what they do on an individual daily basis and how important their work is to interact with the customer, even though they may not face-to-face with the customer all the time.
Right. And performance standards. I think you've got to know how to win every day. So I know that I'm going to bring in 3 cars and I'm going to get 3.2 billable hours off of every car. And from that, my parts to labor is going to be 55 and 45. And I'm going to come out with a 62% labor margin and a 54% parts margin. And that gives me a 61.5 gross profit. You know, I mean, all of that. And our average, so... I took a class.
That's okay. We went from quality, emotional leadership, value, feeling right about yourself, having a purpose in a daily thing to the numbers, and wow, what an interesting transition here.
It's connected for me.
Yeah,
in my mind.
I get that, and wow, what an interesting transition. What you're saying is the productivity, the numbers. Get strong and are solid if all of that soft stuff works.
Is it soft stuff?
I
challenge that.
Well,
is it soft? Is it urethral? Is it you tear? Oh, is it you tear? Is that a word? I don't know. Is it? I don't know. But is it, or is it substance? Is it, if we can back it up saying that we're losing $11.9 trillion because, okay, so you have a technician, they have 8 hours a day. That's 8 bananas. If they only produce 6 saleable hours, you've lost 2 bananas 2 hours a day.
Yeah, I know. Let me try to defend my word soft stuff. this is a great argument we're having here.
This is debate.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Debate.
I like those words.
My thoughts were is that in many cases, entrepreneurs that have gotten themselves in great positions, but yet are failing in that on that people leadership front. That's soft stuff to them. It's not a lift I can look at and a wrench that I have and a scan tool that I own and a lobby that I have. And so many of the other things that makes a good leader to empower their people in their minds may be soft in something they can't touch. And that's the leap in my mind that it takes from a person to stand by and say, my job is to set the vision and empower my people to care about the cause that we're all going after.
All right, you got me. I agree.
All right.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Understood.
Okay.
That it is soft because it's not black and white. It's not on paper. You can't measure it. I mean, you can. You can look at productivity. You can look at efficiency. You can look at your posted labor rate versus your effective labor rate. You know, how many dollars are flying out the window of labor lost? And if you're losing labor, you're losing parts because we're a labor parts business. I don't care what they try to sell on the internet. We're a labor parts business.
Yeah, what you're saying is that the accountability to bringing a quality engagement and purpose and leadership in the business can and will show up in the numbers.
Does. Every time.
Yeah.
It does every time. And remember I said we were at our pinnacle. My takeaway back in the beginning, we talked about our shop, was it doesn't matter how great it gets. It doesn't stay there. You know, we have suffered a $300,000 loss in sales this year from our move. And some of it's the move, but Carm, some of it's the culture. You know, our employees, the motivation. You can imagine if you're in a torturous relationship, every time you go home and it's miserable, when you go to work, you don't feel so good. Well, when you come to work and you've got people driving by at 2 miles an hour, looking in and stopping and yelling and where'd that piece of paper come? You know, just silly, silly stuff because they're angry because they no longer have control of us. We aren't going to stay there. You know, when you don't come through on your word, and what is written, then things need to change, right? In business. And so that's the change that we made. And we tried to make it as amicable as possible, take the loss and move on. And, you know, I think she wanted us there another 5 years and then she was going to sell it. And I said, that doesn't make business sense to me to put money into your building and wait for the economy to pick up because Tesla's coming here in Nevada. We've got Switch here. We are an entrepreneur, one of the top 10 entrepreneur climates in the nation. We are featured in the New York Times. It's a great place to be. It's a challenge, but it's a great place.
Are you talking about all of Nevada or the area that Reno. You live in Reno?
I'm talking about Northern Nevada, which okay. is Reno, Washoe County, Truckee, Sparks, up north.
Got it. I believe you would agree that being a top tech is real hard work. Keeping up is a full-time gig, considering vehicle technology, repair procedures, and diagnostics. It's refreshing to know that Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Guru is there for you. It's been designed by and for technicians, the best in the industry. And did you know there's no other comprehensive program like this anywhere? A big part of the program is the nationwide network of Guru's on-site training and technology centers. There, you can get your hands dirty with the equipment and tools you use every day in real work-related situations. When online is your perfect way to learn, do it with Guru's 24/7 online academy with a huge catalog of training course options. And with the Guru's on-the-go technology fleet, they bring the latest products and demos right to your shop. And this year, you get free stuff from the Garage Rewards Loyalty Program. You earn points towards gear from your favorite Federal Mogul Motor Parts' brands. And what is really great, it costs nothing to join, and you'll start earning points immediately. So head on over to fmgarageGurus.com and learn all about Garage Gurus training, support, and get in on the rewards. Hey, what's got you fired up right now?
You mean just my passion in my voice?
Well, yeah, maybe.
I love this industry. I love the men and women in this industry. And I guess it's because I've always liked the underdog. My why I'm here is because I want to change it. I want to raise it. I want to lift it. And I want the people in it to get what they deserve. And I just don't believe that's happening.
What's your biggest strength?
Probably my passion. It's hard not to feel it. And it's true. It's genuine. It's authentic. It's me. I believe in being, leading a purposeful life. I read Zig Ziglar at 16. And I love life. And at 38, I had a 10% chance of living. I was peritonitic at the time. It was very bad. And I came out the other end of that. And so I've experienced some great things in my life that allow me to live deeply, fully, and passionately, good, bad, and ugly.
Excellent. If you didn't need money in life, what would you be doing?
If I didn't need money in life, I'd probably own a 40-acre ranch with about 100 horses, and people would be coming out to that barn to learn leadership and to understand themselves and each other and how to communicate better.
Shari, what's the boldest decision you've ever made?
To take this job as COO.
Okay.
I would say. Recently, I've had some pretty bold decisions. I was involved in bringing the bullying out nationwide through a task force with the Attorney General in Nevada back in 1996, before Columbine and things like that. And so I can have a pretty big impact, obviously. But I'd say recently, that's been my greatest challenge.
So with the horse program and the shop, now being the COO of the Institute, what drove you to do that?
Well, the shop was, I believed in my husband. He is very great at what he does. He is so intelligent and so caring. And he's really in this industry because he wants to help people. And he has a great knack for cars. Our son built his first engine at 9. It's an Affinity. I don't have that Affinity. They're horsepower with wheels. As long as it's in cylinders, I'm horsepower with hooves and a heart. So a little bit different, but all about horsepower. And so the success that we experienced as a shop, I wanted to help others do it because I'm the business end. I'm not the technician. I'm not the industry expert. I've been in it for a long time now. But I don't know that in the 1996 Ford 250 VIN number, blah, blah, always had this.
Mm-hmm.
He does.
Got it.
And he's not the only one.
Sure.
So these guys, their passion for this these mechanical things that take us to work and help us serve our families and get us on vacations and keep us warm in cold weather because we're not walking or riding horseback anymore, right? They don't get paid what they deserve. And people question it, and they don't have the confidence to charge what they should. So that's why I wanted to be the COO. And I'll tell you what, Cecil Bullard, he's a tough man, but he is a genius. He's great to work for. We have great ups and downs. Same as my husband. I have one on each side, a work husband and a home husband. But what he offered us and what he has to offer really can change your life in your shop. And he worked with us kind of almost as a marriage counselor in some ways. So, you know, he gets personal. It's about people. It's about process. It's about product. And making that happen. And he has a lot of passion too. So can you imagine?
Well, so with all of this, I want to bring the interview to a little bit of a conclusion. What do you see the shop of the future looking like? And it may not be technology. I mean, since we're talking a lot about leadership. What do you see?
So for me, what I see as the shop of the future is a shop that understands it's really not about automotive repair and can communicate that to people, that it's about their convenience. It's neo-oriented, so neo versus traditional. Neo is the new millennials. They're looking for a valued experience, a unique experience. Traditionals are just looking for something cheap, a discount. It's a totally different way of thinking. There's a great YouTube video on neo versus traditional. But so they offer convenience and special services so people feel like family again, kind of like the doctor that used to come to your house. So we went to these big hospitals, but now if you look at the medical industry, they're popping doctors up in little neighborhoods. They have little tiny satellite offices because we're going back to neighborhoods. Churches used to be neighborhoods. And some people, because of the diverse spirituality, religion, it's all over. Schools are more neighborhoods now, where parents gather and they teach there in that way. And so our shops have to be that. We have to be engaged in our communities. Our communities demand it and they deserve it. We need to serve our people first. And we obviously have to keep up with technology. We need to and with that, we hold the responsibility to educate the public about the paradigm shift this industry has gone through. Please forgive me, but I just don't think we've done a good enough job on that, because they wouldn't be walking into our shop saying, how much? They'd be saying, really, that's all?
Boy, that's pretty powerful. And it really does echo so many of what many of our former guests on the podcast have said. And it was very well said. Thank you so much. Now, give us some Shari Pheasant words to live by.
Well, let's see. I look up on my wall. It says, be the change you wish to see in the world. That's okay. Gandhi. Make it hurt. Make it uncomfortable. So my leadership strengths, number one and two, is a strategic arranger. But at the bottom of them, it would be harmony and empathy. It doesn't mean I don't have it, but I'm a good cowgirl. So dust yourself up, off, get up, do it again. Oh, you know, that's my empathy is you're all right. Get up, do it again. And go from the heart. And definitely just go for the heart and you won't find everything isn't easy. If you're looking for easy, sit down on your recliner. If you want to live, then get up and make it happen.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Carm, so much. Appreciate it. You're a great man.
How sweet. Thanks. Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.